listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
We're excited to have RX Destroyer sponsoring the Pharmacy Podcast Network. RX Destroyer is transforming the drug disposal space by bringing your facility and patients a simple and effective method of safely disposing of unused, unwanted medications. If you're worried about drug diversion and federal rules compliance, learn how RX Destroyer can keep you DEA compliant by checking out www.rxdestroyer.com/Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Listening to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, a place where individuality, passion, and dedication are right at home. Here for those of you who are seeking inspiration and chasing their dreams and insights into the day-to-day life of a modern woman in pharmacy. Your host is an entrepreneurial pharmacist, a pharmacy advocate, and founder of the Lux Pharmacist. Welcome to the Lux Pharmacist Podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hi everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to the second residency series episode on the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. I cannot believe that the second episode is already here. Time is just flying by, and the fact that it's already November is absolutely crazy to me. I know application season is officially right around the corner, and if you are a ball of nerves and stress and excitement all at once, do not worry, this is totally normal and 100% how I felt last year. As promised, this episode is going to go over the entire application process itself, including the actual application website, which is called Forecast. I'm going to also be diving into CVs and letter of intents and letter of recommendations, everything. But first, like I mentioned last time, let's actually dive into how you're going to be narrowing down which programs you're actually applying to. I know that the entire residency application process can be really overwhelming for students, but I think the first most overwhelming thing is trying to figure out where you're actually applying to. So I hope that these tips will really help you guys try and narrow that down without being super overwhelmed. And I think the first most important thing to realize is that you're not going to be 100% sure of a program just by reading about them online. And honestly, that is so normal. I mean, there could be a program that you on paper are so excited about, and then you get there in that interview and you just decide it is not for you. Or there could be places that you're really unsure about, and then you go there and you interview and you're absolutely blown away. So do not think that you have to be 100% sure of anything. That actually really is what the interview process is for, is to give you a better idea about the program as well. One of the things that people always say is that as much as they are interviewing you, you are actually also interviewing that program, because I mean, think about it, you're spending an entire year of your life there. So you're also really evaluating that institution and that program and seeing if it's a good fit for you. So again, you are not going to be 100% sure of a program, or you may think you are, and then it turns out that you don't actually feel that way. So let's just get over the impression that you have to be 100% sure to apply to a place. If we first eliminate that, you know, biased thought, then I think that the pressure goes down a lot in terms of applying to places. You should really be applying to programs that you're excited about and you want to learn more about. The other important thing I think to realize is that there probably really is no perfect program for you. I know I at least felt that way, or even the programs that I was still most excited about, they still had some kind of drawback, or they still were missing something else that a different program had, and that's totally normal. I don't think you're ever going to find, you know, a program that is 100% everything you could ever dream of in a residency, but again, that's also just reading about them from paper, right, or from their online website. So when you're first looking at programs, you should have a list of your top priorities, whether that is, you know, I absolutely need to have some kind of ambulatory care, or I love transplant and the program or the institution has to offer some kind of transplant. So I think every student is going to have a different top priority list. but you should be using that list to determine which programs could potentially be a really good fit for you in your specific, you know, interests or goals for residency. And then I think there's also a lot of factors that we want to tell ourselves mean a lot. So maybe this is how frequently you would have to staff, or how far it is from your house, or, you know, maybe it's a smaller institution and you want it to be at a larger one, or maybe it doesn't have the exact number of co-residents that you wanted. But at the end of the day, a lot of these things are very minute, and you have to really ask yourself, do I want to not be a resident more than I don't want to have blank? I think a good example of this is right now, I drive an hour one way, you know, to go to work every single day. But there has not been a day, no matter how tired I am, no matter how late I'm getting home, it really doesn't matter. The fact that at the end of the day, I'm a resident and I get to complete a PGY1 residency and I get to, you know, set myself up to have a really good clinical job next year, that is at the end of the day what matters. So, you know, in the beginning, I actually wrote off this program as one that I didn't even look at in phase one. For any of you guys that have followed my journey, you know that I ended up matching in phase two. So in phase one, I didn't even look at this hospital because it is in Bridgeport, which again is about an hour away from my house. And there were other programs that, you know, I was interested in, and I just thought, oh, I don't really need to like add an extra one to my list, right? So I didn't even look into it. Come to find out in phase two, I actually love my program and I actually was so interested in it, which, you know, was a godsend for me because, again, you know, I was trying to match in phase two and I didn't want to end up with a program that I didn't like. And again, I do love my program, but I also would have loved it in phase one, right? So you shouldn't write off programs for those little, like, again, very minute things that may not be ideal, but again, would you rather be in retail next year over, you know, dealing with that minute thing that isn't exactly what you pictured? I mean, life is unfair, right? You're never going to get exactly what you want. So you really have to determine, you know, what is worth it to me? What am I willing to do to still be a resident next year? And I guess I shouldn't say, you know, you're never going to get what you want, but a lot of the times, you know, we have this very particular picture in our mind of what would make us happy. And then, you know, that may not happen, but it turns out that we're really happy in the end, no matter what. So I think that everything does happen for a reason. You know, I think I didn't match in phase one for a reason. And again, I'm very thankful for where I am at, and I do love my program. So it's not to say that, you know, you're not going to get your dream program or you're not going to get something that you love, but just be aware that, you know, it might not be what you're picturing right now, and that's probably honestly going to be perfectly okay. So last year for me, when I was going through this process in phase one, I actually only applied to 4 places. Again, because I was really narrowing down, I thought that I had to, you know, be so confident in a place. I didn't really want to apply somewhere I wasn't really sure of, or I didn't think I would absolutely love. And obviously I wasn't applying to places that were like an hour away. So I really limited myself. But there were also a lot of my friends that were applying to like 10, 13 different places. And I actually did read a stat, I believe it was from 2018, 2019, where the average applicant applied to about 10 places. So I don't think that is, you know, by any means outrageous or, you know, not worth it. I think it is worth it. So, you know, and it doesn't have to be 10 places. It obviously depends if you're, you know, going across the country or you're trying to stay really locally. But I would just say my biggest advice would be to not, you know, cut off programs due to those little minor things. I would try and keep your mind open in terms of that, and then just kind of let the interview process guide you in terms of what you like the most. So that's that in terms of my advice on how to figure out where to apply. Now let's get into the actual application process itself, which last time I didn't explain all that much just because it was, you know, very basics about what a residency actually is. So for the residency application process, there is a website that you go through where you essentially upload everything that you need in terms of documents and things like that. And that website is called Forecast, and it will be opening tomorrow on November 5th at 3 p.m. With this episode, I really want to give you guys a great foundational background in terms of how the actual site works and what all the steps are. That way, tomorrow when you get on the site, it doesn't look completely foreign to you like it did for me, and you can kind of get the ball rolling right away. I actually found a really great YouTube video that actually shows you the website, so that can kind of orientate you better than I can just trying to describe this site to you. So I will put that link on my blog for you guys to just easily find it. But again, that will really walk you through all of the steps. But there are some things that I know that I wish I had known last year, and those are kind of the things that I'm going to be really highlighting for you today. First major piece of advice would be regarding transcripts. So I actually ended up requesting my transcripts kind of late last year because it somehow was just something that I overlooked. I don't even know how. So as soon as you put in your pharmacy school name and program and all of that into your, school information, it'll be right on the website. But I think to the left of that, there is a request transcript button that brings you to a form to like formally request the transcripts from your school. You should do that as soon as possible. If we think about the whole timing of these applications, it kind of ends up being right around Christmas break, right? So if you remember to request your transcripts and then you realize that your school is closed for the holidays, you're going to run into some issues. So again, put your school information in there, get that form, and request them right away. One of the other things I want to highlight, and it's kind of an unfortunate thing that you have to do, but essentially, you know how your CV will have your work experience, your, you know, extracurriculars, your awards and honors, all of that. You essentially have to take that and re-upload it into this program, into like the actual application. So you have to hand input each one of those. Say you have 5 awards. Under awards, you need to add 5 different entries. Again, grammar and all those things are huge, just like they are on your CV. But unfortunately, you do have to, I guess, re-enter what is on your CV into this application. I don't know why. It's just how it is. And speaking of uploading things, actually, something that is very important to be aware of is that when you upload something, you can't delete it. So if you upload your CV and you call it CV final, and then you realize it's not final because there's a bunch of mistakes or something like that, you can't actually delete that. So my advice would be, do not upload anything until you have looked it over 100 times and you are 100% sure that that is actually your final version of your CV that you do want uploaded. The other thing with that is that you should try and be really like systematic, I guess I could call it, in terms of what you're naming things, because you're gonna have, probably a million different versions of each thing. So every time, you know, I edited my CV, somehow you have to save it as like, this is an edited version, this is version 4, this is version whatever. And again, when you're very confident that it is your final version, save it somewhere, maybe in a different folder, or label it final, call it something, and then upload it to the Forecast site. Because once you upload something to Forecast, you cannot delete it. And then once you, I guess, pick which things are going to which program, again, you have to label them in a certain way. So let's say you're applying to my program, you know, you would label it St. Vincent's letter of intent. So you need to label these things in a way that you can identify where they need to go. But again, do not upload anything into Forecast unless you are 100% confident that it is your final version. So those are really the biggest things that I guess going through the process last year, I wish I knew about the forecast site, so I hope that that is helpful for you guys. I think it's also worth mentioning that there are two different websites. So there is Forecast, and again, that's where you upload all your documents, that's where you send things to your program. But there's also a national matching service. So this is a different website. It's a different thing you have to sign up for. When you do sign up for it, you do have to pay a fee, which is why you don't have to do it right away. Again, there will be a specific deadline to sign up for that by. But essentially what this does is after you have interviewed, you go in and you put in your preferred rank order for the programs. And then the programs do the same thing. They put in their rank order for candidates, and then the national matching service is what, you know, matches them across the board, and that's why it's called a match. So you will have matched to a program, or you will have not matched to a program. So those are essentially the two different sites that you're working with throughout the residency application process. And one of the biggest things that I had actually also gotten asked about in terms of the application process was advice for CVs and letters of intent and letters of recommendation, which I 100% understand why you're asking, because I know how overwhelming it can be just from going through it last year. And obviously, I'm not an expert on CVs or an expert on how to write letters of intent by any means, but I did go through the process last year, and I did spend such a long time on my application materials. So from that standpoint, I do have a lot of advice just in general, which is what I'm going to be sharing with you guys. But just as a forewarning, I am not an expert in this, nor am I trying to pretend like I'm an expert in this. But obviously, I want to help you guys with the advice that I do have. So first, let's get into CVs. So I have to say, one of the things I was always really proud of was my CV from pharmacy school, because I was so involved, and you know, I was in clubs and organizations and honor societies, and I worked and I did research and I volunteered. So I had a lot on my CV, and I thought that it was organized, you know, pretty good. But I did get a lot of feedback during my application process, and having preceptors and things like that help me edit it. So a lot of that advice is what I'm going to be sharing with you guys, because I'm sure you're in a similar boat where you have a great CV already. It just needs some cleaning up, I guess I should say, for the application process, because we do want them to be the very best that they can be. So first thing is first, always edit in, say, a Word document, and then always upload in a PDF. That way, when someone else opens your document, the formatting, like, and nothing can go wrong. It's always going to look exactly how you wanted it to look, because you saved it and uploaded it as a PDF. So that's my number one advice. And a lot of this advice in general is going to sound probably very OCD or very nitpicky, but I promise you guys, that programs are like this. So first, narrow margins, people. We want to fit as much per page as we can. Obviously, we don't want your CV to be one page, but we also don't want it to be 8 pages for no reason. Like I said, I did a lot in pharmacy school, and mine just hit a 5th page, and the only thing on page 5 was like licensures and certifications. So you want to include a lot, but you also want to be as precise as possible. With that being said, it also should line up like very perfectly. So some of the advice I actually got on rotations, which I didn't do because I would have had to go way back in terms of like restarting, but one of my preceptors gave me the advice to actually use like a table, and then you can obviously choose to get rid of the borders on the table. So that was just a quick way, I guess, to assure that everything is lined up perfectly. I did have to go back through and, you know, really assure that everything was lined up perfectly and check it multiple times. But if you are starting from a more scratch point and you can start to do a table, that would also be helpful. And when I say that things shouldn't line up, what I mean is that if I'm putting bullets under one of my rotations for things that I've done, those sentences should not cross over. Say I'm putting March like 2019 as that time frame for that rotation. Those columns, your date column, and then your, you know, a description column, those shouldn't be overlining. They shouldn't be overlapping at all. It should look like very clean lines when you're looking at your pages. So that is kind of, if you can picture a table, you know, how things can't possibly go under one another, that's kind of what I mean by no overlapping. again, in terms of bullets, you know, we want to explain everything that we've done, but there, for some things, are probably a more concise way to say it, or you could be more general and then elaborate on it in an interview. And also, it is best, or it is preferred, to have a similar number of bullet points under each different thing. So for each section, not like your whole CV in general, but say for all your rotations, if all of them have three bullets underneath them and then one doesn't, it's going to be like, well, did you do nothing for that rotation? So try and have the same number of bullets under each type of thing. Obviously, for a presentation or something, it's probably going to be like a one-liner, and that's fine, but it should also be like a one-liner for all your presentations, if that makes sense. Another thing is try and keep sections together. Obviously, no matter how you try and organize your CV, it is going to probably be impossible to have all sections on the exact same page. But if you are going to split things up, just make sure that each individual component, so let's say one of my rotations was the CTICU, my bullet points under the CTICU need to all be on the same page. It's acceptable to split up sections like appy rotations. You probably, you know, depending on your layout, can't fit all your appy rotations on one page, but it is 100% unacceptable to have bullet points under one thing be on two different pages. So that is how you want to prioritize, you know, where, when things are falling on different pages. Whole section split up, fine. Individual, you know, description of one thing splitting up, definitely not okay. And the other thing is that sometimes you will, you know, space down to purposely move something to the next page in order to keep the bullet points together for a specific thing. But just keep in mind not to have huge gaps at the bottom. Again, we don't want it to look like we're purposely trying to make the CV longer. We don't want it to look like we have huge margins on the side. That's why we're using narrow margins. And we also don't want to have huge gaps at the bottom that make it look like we're purposely trying to make it longer, if that makes sense. So you want it to be as concise as possible. Obviously, another huge thing is grammar and spelling and all of that, which is not my strong suit at all, but I'm guessing that you all know someone. For me, it was my mom. I had her read everything and help me. Some of my preceptors also offered to help me, which was amazing. So you should all, you know, find your people that are good at that stuff and are willing to help you and work with them on that. And then in terms of letters of intent, I feel like this was a really big struggle for me because I had never like had to write one before. So it is an actual letter. You do have the actual letter heading at the top with the residency program director's name and then also the institution's name and address. And then you'll also want to date the letter, the day that you're writing it. And this letter, I mean, it's a letter. It's literally saying, "Dear Dr. blah, blah, blah." And I'm sure a lot of people write them differently, and I'm sure everyone writes them, you know, a different number of ways, but I'm just kind of going to explain the overall layout that I had for mine because it was really helpful. Essentially, I only had one paragraph besides, you know, when I'm addressing the institution's name, I'm obviously saying a different institution per which place I'm going to send it to. But overall, I only really had one paragraph that was really changing. So that, I mean, really helped me in terms of being able to have really good letters of intent for each place and also not having to like reinvent the wheel each time I had to write a new letter for a different residency program. So all of my letters started with me saying, "I'm writing to express my interest in the PGY1 residency program at blank hospital, blank program," essentially. So you want to start off by addressing why you're writing the letter. That's essentially, you know, what a letter of intent is. And then my first paragraph, which that was in, also was just kind of a short story on, you know, why I first got interested in pharmacy in general and why I'm still so passionate about it. So that was paragraph one. And then paragraph two was my institution specific paragraph. So that is where, you know, I would talk about why I was specifically interested in that program. If they had, you know, rotations that I was very interested in, that was there. You know, if I knew people or if I had done rotations, I put that there. So my second paragraph was everything specific to that program, which is why I wanted to apply to that program. That's what paragraph two was. And then paragraph three, kind of, and four, just because I split it up a little bit, these weren't huge paragraphs by any means, but these were talking about, you know, my assets and my skills that were going to make me a good resident there. So talking about, you know, my leadership experience or just things that I had gone through in school, you know, all of the experiences and strengths that I had that I thought would make me a really good resident, that is what was in paragraph three and four. And then paragraph five for me was kind of like my goals for residency, or what I hope to accomplish and kind of how that program would help me accomplish it. And then paragraph six, you know, was a very general summary and kind of like a thank you for your consideration thing. And then at the bottom, I would put, you know, best regards or sincerely, you know, and I would write my whole name. But then I also hand signed them, which I thought was a very nice fancy touch. So I suggest you do the same thing. And I know I did just mention six paragraphs, which sounds like a lot, but again, these weren't necessarily very long paragraphs. It just looked better to kind of split it up in terms of paragraphs. It's kind of the same thing where you want to be precise and short, but also give depth to it. So in general, just for reference, again, I was using narrow margins, and I believe I was at about one page and a third onto the second page, and then like my signature. So not super long. Again, you don't want to write like a 2-3 page letter. No one's going to read that, but you obviously want to, you know, talk about everything that you want to talk about. So I think around a page to a page and a half at the very most, I think, is what I would recommend. And this, similar to the CV, is something that you are going to have a million drafts of, probably more than a CV, because again, a lot of us already have kind of a draft of a CV that isn't awful. You know, it doesn't need that much work. But when you're starting from scratch, writing a letter that has so much weight to it, it's a very stressful situation. And I know how many times I edited mine. So again, this is something where you want to be saving the drafts in a specific way where you know which version is the final version. Again, you need to name them per the institution, because when you upload them to Forecast, you need to be able to see which one is, again, for example, my program, you need to know which one's going to St. Vincent's Medical Center. So you need to label them in that way. And another piece of advice, because this is something that I did, I wanted to send these to everyone because I wanted so many people's opinions. But the thing is that we all know people who are going to give us a million edits and help so much and be like our, you know, our cheerleaders and our people. But we also know people who are just going to call you on the phone and say, oh my God, sweetie, that looks so good. You are so hireable. I'm so proud of you. Looks great. No changes. No, like, I'm sorry, but no, I don't have time for that. And a perfect example of this was with my parents. So I sent it to my mom and I sent it to my dad. My mom sent me back a million edits. I mean, she edits like medical journals for a living and is super detail oriented and like my person when it comes to these things. And then I remember my dad just, you know, saying, oh my God, I'm so proud of you, blah, blah, blah. And I, from that point on, I did not send him one more thing because it's like, I love you, Dad, and you're going to listen to this. But you know, it's not helpful. It's not what I'm looking for. I need more than that right now. So my advice would be send it to the people who you know are going to edit a million things and send it back to you. And then send it to, you know, your just lovely cheerleaders after the fact, after all your applications are in, and then they can be proud of you then. But in the meantime, you have work to do. And then the other chunk of the applications that we still have to talk about are letters of recommendation. So these are obviously going to look different for each person just based on their experiences. If you are someone who has worked in an institutional setting like a hospital, then you probably have a boss from that setting writing you a letter of recommendation, which makes sense because they've known you for a while. And again, you know, it's most likely a institutional based residency. So that's a great idea. For me, I did not have that because I had only ever worked at CVS, and during the time of applications, I wasn't even working. So all of my letters of recommendation came from my rotations, which at first I was a little worried about, obviously because These people have only known you for 4 or 6 weeks, depending on how long you have rotations. And then one of the residents at the time that I was working with kind of reassured me that that's what a lot of students have, because if you think about it, APU rotations are very similar to residency. Obviously, residency is much more intense, but it is similar in terms of the types of things that you are doing. So if you show, you know, your work ethic and how passionate you are about institutional pharmacy and all those things on rotations, then that is a great way to get a letter of recommendation. And just because they haven't known you for a while doesn't necessarily hurt you. Maybe they're a preceptor at the hospital that you actually want to apply to. That could be a great thing. And obviously these preceptors have, a lot of them have done a residency, and a lot of them have a lot of hands-on experience with residents. So if someone can highly recommend you who is one of your preceptors and they have all that experience, it really isn't necessarily a bad thing. So if you do only have people from rotations writing you letters of recommendation, do not panic, because that is exactly what I had. And the other thing I want to mention is that the absolute best letters of recommendation are going to come from people who you don't actually ask to write you a letter of recommendation. So these are going to come from people who, one, know that you want a residency. I think that's really important as a student, is to let your preceptors know that you are pursuing a residency, maybe ask to take on extra projects, you know, ask for research, ask for other things, you know, show up every day and really work on that rotation and show them that you can handle a residency and that you deserve a residency. And by the end of your rotation, I guarantee you that if they think that you would be a great resident, they're going to offer to write you a letter of recommendation without you even asking. And the reason I think that those are the best letters of recommendation is because a lot of the times preceptors have to end up writing more than one letter of recommendation, right? And obviously they take a lot of time on their part, especially to make it a good detailed letter. So you don't want someone who isn't fully supporting or backing you to write you one, because they're not going to put in their full effort, which is going to translate into people reading it, right? So you want people who are like your number one cheerleaders to be writing you these letters. And this is kind of the reason why I actually ended up having a pretty unique letter of recommendation. So on one of my rotations, it was general medicine, I was rounding by myself, so I was with the medical team, and one of the attendings that I had worked with was kind of notorious for being, you know, not harsh, but just, you know, expecting a lot out of people, including pharmacy students. And I kind of at first was sort of, I guess, intimidated to work with him because I knew that. And I, you know, I wanted to do good. And that rotation for me was probably one of my most independent ones, just because I was rounding by myself as a student and my preceptor was kind of like down in their shared office and, you know, had trusted me to be upstairs and to come down with questions or anything that I needed help with. So I did a lot on that rotation very independently. And then at the end of the 2 weeks that I had with that attending, he had asked to give me feedback on my last day. You know, he said, please don't leave, you know, before we have a chance to talk. I'd like to give you some feedback. And I was so scared. I was like, oh, great. Like, what's he going to say? And it ended up being really good feedback. And he ended up being very, you know, excited that he had gotten to work with me and he saw my passion for pharmacy and how hard I was working. I mean, I was a student. I was getting there at like 6:30 in the morning to pre-round and, you know, like get my work done. So I was prepared for rounds at 7:38. And I think he saw all of that and knew that, well, first of all, he asked where I was going, you know, next year, what I was thinking of pursuing. And I kind of explained to him that, similar to medical residents, that we have residency. And instantly he was like, oh, I want to write you a letter of recommendation, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, again, I'm so impressed with you. So I ended up having an attending write me one of my letters of recommendation, which I think is pretty unique. So I had him, and then I had my ambulatory care preceptor, and then I also had my preceptor for my management and teaching rotation. So I had all people from rotations, again, even the attending, he knew me for 2 weeks. And at first, having him as a letter of recommendation was kind of scary because it wasn't someone from pharmacy and it was only someone I knew for 2 weeks. But at the same time, every time I met with him and every time, you know, we would catch up, he was so like, no, I write really good letters of recommendation. Trust me, you have nothing to work about. Like, or to worry about, you were amazing, like, I want to write you a letter. So those are the type of people who are going to write you the best letters. They are the ones that are going to advocate for you on your behalf, and they are the ones who are most passionate about where you're going next year just as much as you are. So again, when you find those people, those are your cheerleaders. Those are like your unicorn letters of recommendation. Those are what you're striving for and what you're trying to find. So if you didn't have, you know, bosses from work to write you a letter of recommendation, or you didn't know faculty at your school super, super well for the past blank years to write you a letter of recommendation, and you only had people from appy rotations, do not freak out. That is exactly what I had, and I think that is really normal. And if you also don't feel like you found your unicorn letter of recommendation, I don't mean to freak anyone out by that. I'm just saying that those are going to be hands down the best letters, just because those people are so passionate about, you know, you and you being a resident next year. But you still have time. I mean, it's literally the beginning of November, and you may have at least one or two more rotations by the time applications are going to be due. So just keep it in the back of your mind, you know, to show up to rotation every day like it is a job interview, and try, you know, and make the best connections with your preceptors and other people that you're meeting, and everything will work out the exact way that it is supposed to, I promise. So that does it for the 411 on applications. I truly hope that this episode was so helpful for you guys. I wish you the best of luck in terms of your residency application journey. Good luck with the forecast system opening up tomorrow. Again, I'm going to put the link to that YouTube video and some other resources that should be helpful for you guys on my blog site for you, so you can access it that way. Again, don't forget to follow me on Instagram at theluxpharmacist and check out my blog, theluxpharmacist.com, for more helpful residency tips and to follow my journey overall. Thank you so much for listening.
That's all for this episode of the Lux Pharmacist Podcast. Be sure to share this podcast on your social media networks, and let's reach more innovative pharmacists with a flair for style, a creative approach to life, and a passion for patient care. Learn more. Check out theluxpharmacist.com.